like earthquakes and other natural resource, natural things, we use the log.
I'm not using that word. That was the specification on this tutelage. No L word. Sorry, colleagues. We're rejecting it. I'm just kidding. All right, so now what do we do with CD? Okay. You go out one day and you buy, if you've got your ham license, you go out and you buy yourself a Schneider transceiver, 100 watts HF transceiver. You come home with it, and weather's like this, it's miserable, but, you know, you're anxious to get it on the air. You just paid all this money. So you open up the window and you put out a simple wet noodle antenna. And you get on the air with the wet noodle antenna, you make contact, and it seems to work, whatever. But, of course, you want to say you want to, you know, so-called better yourself. So you send away for a new antenna. It comes in a nice box, famous Suzette antenna. And weather gets decent, like you may have in the next couple of days, you put up the Suzette antenna, and you get on the air and you're making contact with it. And you say, gee, was it worth the effort? Well, how are you going to know? You compare it. There it is. Again, here's our thing with DD. You must have a comparison, an in and an out, one level to a, something to something. You can't otherwise defeat something. Now, when you put up the doodad antenna, you compare it, and the guys say, oh, yeah, you're 5 dB stronger than antenna B, the doodad antenna, than antenna A, the wet noodle antenna. Well, it's consistent that way. You know that the doodad antenna is doing a better job than the wet noodle antenna. The reason you know this now, because you're doing a comparison. Otherwise, this RFC system that we use in ham radio, there's a lot of baloney. Believe me, if you're getting through, if they hear you, they can give you, make out your name, your location, all the stuff and all, it doesn't mean anything, whether or not they say they're 5'9", I guarantee you, they'll say 5'9", 5 over. If you had three people on the same block with ham stations, I bet each one will give you a different report. So don't worry so much about that. The DB business here is for comparison. That's what it was invented for comparing one thing to another. And I'll give you another really good example. Anybody else have any questions first?
Reference to 0 dBm to 1 milliwatt.
Howie, please. I'm going to lose the whole audience. I'm trying to take it slow. Stay away from that now. We're not going to get into that right now. Please. Anybody have any other questions? Okay. Now, let's see. Now that we're armed, we know something about DBs, as Vic even said, with 3 dBs and all this stuff about what does it mean? What good is it? Okay, years ago, Vic started to talk about when we were youngsters, Vic and I. A lot of people built their own rigs and things like that. Yes, in fact, in QSCSC this month, they have my original rig that was built on the wooden chassis. But also, those days, they had things called high fidelity. High fidelity. You'd go into a store, and you'd buy a speaker, and then you'd buy an amplifier, you'd buy a tuner, an AM/FM tuner, maybe a phonograph to play your records on, and maybe even a reel-to-reel tape recorder. Okay, so you go in, let's say you went into a store to buy and you look at high fidelity, you look at the speaker. And the speaker is a nice speaker. Oh, just nice shiny finish. They're all wood cabinets and all. The XYL will be very happy with it now. So, you say, okay, oh, it's a little bit pricey, but it looks like this is the thing I want. And you'll look at it, and one of the specifications on it to get the full range of the speaker, it says it requires 20 watts of power. And you say, okay, and now you look at a selection of amplifiers. And you say, gee, well, maybe I can, see if I can get a little bit of a better deal with the amplifier, make up some of the money I'm spending here on the speaker. And one of the amplifiers, you see, it says, the price is right, it says 30 watts. You say, oh boy, that should fit the bill. However, the manufacturer, the amplifier, to protect himself, right next to it, 30 watts plus or minus 3 dB. And would you buy this amplifier now? Now let's look. Now we know dB. So we look into it and say, gee, well, if get the plus 3 dB, it'd be great. That'll be double a nice 60-watt amplifier. However, if I'm the poor schlamazel that gets the one with the minus 3 dB, oh my God, I'll get half the power here. I'll only get about 15 watts or so. So I say, would I buy this amplifier? Of course not. The reason they put that plus or minus is the manufacturer of the amplifier this way protects himself legally. But you see how that little knowledge of knowing power versus what the specification is, that plus or minus 3 dB makes a lot of difference in whether you would purchase this item. See, again, now we're using this as a comparison again, because we know the amplifier supposedly starts out, supposedly should be at 30 watts, but they're telling us now it's plus or minus 3 dB. Without knowing that wattage first, this would not mean anything to plus or minus. They just said plus or minus 3 dB. We wouldn't even, the amplifier would mean nothing. But there it again. It's a comparison. And let me see if anybody has any questions, and I'll give it one more comparison. Okay, now, you go out and you have the ham station. Now you got the nice new dead antenna out there. And you got the Schneider transceiver, and you're saying to yourself, you're talking in your sleep, so the XYL should hear it, and you think, I need an amplifier, an RIW super kilowatt amplifier. And she gets the hint for your birthday, in comes this box with an RIW super amplifier. You hook it all up, you get on the air, and the guy says, you get a report from this one station, it's 15 over 9. Say to yourself, gee, okay, 15 over 9. Ah, but you say, let's see if this amplifier is really working right. I say to that station, watch your meter, and I turn off the amplifier, go back to my 100 watts, and he says, well, you went down to 5 over 9. Now we know, 10 times the power, as Dick said, 10 times the power, 10 dB. Now we know that that amplifier, yes, it's working well. Again, see, we're doing a comparison. The 100 watt is our input, our standard. Our output now is the amplifier running the difference. There it is. In other words, we cannot use dB unless we have two things to compare. Basically, in most cases, why we use it, when we're evaluating any piece of electronic equipment, we have a signal going in, we measure the signal going out. Is it improving or is it getting down? dB is just a convenient yard to go ahead and stand. I'm talking to Dick. If I say to him something about dB on an amplifier, he knows right away, can envision how much power difference I'm going. So that's basically dB. That sounds pretty good, Dick, over.
Sure does. Get the point across. At the last 10 seconds, the microphone switch was starting to give grief again. Mel, might need a little bit of tuna cleaner in there. That's one very good use of decibels, to compare power before and after you make a change. And there were lots of guys that I've talked to in the past. They will change a feed line. They'll change an antenna. They'll change a transmitting amplifier. And they used to ask me, how many microvolts was my signal, up or down? Or in some cases, they would say, how many decibels of increase was that? How many dB better or worse did it get because it rained or because I made that change? And yes, it's a comparison. Decibels are always a comparison, either to 1 milliwatt, if it's decibels dBm, decibels with reference to a milliwatt, or if it's just increase or decrease from some reference power. Where decibels really shine is when you have huge numbers, like the antenna gain, the between the antenna port of a good receiver and the final output to your loudspeaker. a good receiver has close to 120 decibels of gain. You could call it 12 bells of gain, or you could call it 120 decibels of gain. Same thing, but it's a big number. The ratio in that case would be 1 with 12 zeros after it is the ratio of input and output. And that's what it takes when you start off with an extremely weak signal that you pick up from an antenna and a rather strong signal that comes out of the loudspeaker or it gets fed to the loudspeaker. And the individual stages of the receiver, when you look at the service manual, it may tell you the first stage gives you 15 decibels of gain. The second stage, the IF amplifier section, gives you 31 decibels of gain, and so on. And the nice thing about the gain numbers in decibels is it's a very simple mathematical addition to find out what the cascading of those two stages would give you. If you actually calculated the real numbers for those decibels, they're in many cases exponential mathematics, either very, very small or very, very big numbers, depending on what you talk about, what you started off with, or how much the output is bigger than the input, and the math becomes quite cumbersome. But simply adding and subtracting those decibels becomes very easy. And as such, if you're doing troubleshooting and you're putting a 1 microvolt signal from your signal generator into the front end of the receiver, and you know that somewhere along the line something isn't working because you're not getting any signal out of the loudspeaker, and you keep touching your scope probe to the output of each individual stage of the receiver, and you can see the signal get stronger up until you find the faulty stage, where all of a sudden the signal has no output on that stage, or instead of getting stronger, it's weaker. So knowing decibels of gain and knowing how much stronger the signal should get on your oscilloscope when you're probing that receiver because you're doing troubleshooting, these can be very handy ways of figuring out what's going on. A good electronic technician does that. K2KEY, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Can I complicate this bit?
Let's see if Mel's going to agree with that. He's trying to keep it simple. We're going to add the complication at the end, Howie, but up till now, I've added more complication than I think I should have. Let's see what Mel thinks. Go ahead, Mel.
Roger, this is K2KEY. Yeah, I'm going to see if I can pop this mic open. Got a lot of stuff in the mic, and believe it or not, it doesn't come apart. But getting to the point, I got to do something with this. The pain, imagine. Well, the radio was priceless, right? When I got it for nothing, so I can't really complain. I just say, don't look to give thoughts in the mouth. Anyhow, one more thing I was going to. Dick brought up a very good point. In our days, Dick and I analog. BOM, the caller, although both own milliampere. And on the scale, if you look at any of those old analog meters, they usually had a dB scale. And on the bottom of it, under usually in red, you'll notice that the scale they gave you, in other words, for whatever range you are on, they told you what, how to compensate. In other words, like for instance, I'll just give you a for instance, like mine. Simpson here, 260, my friend here that I've had for many years, still love it, and still use it. I know I'm a dinosaur, but that's it. You'll notice that the 0 dB point is not on one end of the scale. It's sort of a quarter of a way up. And the reason for that is so that whatever you're making a measurement, if you're making a measurement, you will see on the bottom a legend that says, well, if you are on the 2.5 position on the meter, that the dB scale is read directly. However, let's say that the signal that you're using, and by the way, they even had a thing on the meter that says output. which basically just put a capacitor in series with the AC, so that you had a situation, or I should say with DC, so that you had a way of measuring this AC component coming through and we're evaluating things like amplifiers. But if they tell you, in other words, that if you move to another range, you'll see that they tell you how many dB to add your reading so that you can evaluate. And of course, notice where the needle sits quarter way up. You can look at it actually the scale is marked from 20 to plus 10 dB. So you see that you can really evaluate, like Dick said, if you were looking at checking an amplifier, you can check from the input to the output and evaluate whether or not you're making, you know, the amplifier, how it's performing. Is it performing, as Dick was saying, to the specification? This is a very good way of, you know, evaluating a electronic stage. If you have an analog meter, just look at that, and that you'll understand that what I'm trying to bring out. Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, one of the questions that some guys will ask me when they, in the old days when we used volt-ohm milliammeters, triplet or Simpson, is why is the 0 dB point in a crazy position on the meter? And the main reason for that is those decibels on your triplet or Simpson volt-ohm milliammeter were in those days referenced to audio. And audio that was sent around studios was on a reference 600 ohm line. For some reason, somebody said audio should be adjusted for output and input impedances of 600 ohms. On a 600 ohm line, 1 milliwatt of audio on a 600 ohm line is 775 millivolts, 0.775 volts. So if you're on the 1 volt full scale, AC scale RMS, 1 volt AC full scale, 0.775 volts, or 3/4 of the way over toward the right, would be the 0 dB point. And then 0.79% of that down and up and so on would be 1 dB above and below. But the 0 dB point was set with reference to what was the standard then? 600 ohms, line, 1 milliwatt of audio. I think they used that as a reference because 1 milliwatt into a good set of earphones would give you a comfortable amount of audio. I think it's another reason why they set things at 1 milliwatt. A 1 watt power amplifier would be 30 decibels above 1 milliwatt, 1,000 to 1 ratio. And if you had a 1,000 volt full scale, the meter would tell you add 30 decibels to what you read. I'm not sure many of those VOMs had a 1,000 volt full scale. I don't know if they went above 300, but you can tell me about that because you're looking at one now. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Roger, this is K2KEY. Yeah, this one, the maximum scale is, I think, 500 volts DC. Well, as Dick was just saying, basically what you would see on most of these meters were, you'd see it says 0.001 watt at 600 ohms. And that was, like Dick says, the standard for these type of meters because they were considering it at 0.775 volt AC at 600 ohms. In other words, that was the standard of the time. And as you would say, if you had a pair of headphones plugged in and all that would be standard. So it just basically, put the reference to zero. In other words, you had a place to start. You could set your generator so it read zero, that the input would be zero, which, of course, you would say, well, of course, to get up to zero, you'd have to put some power into it because the zero dB is not on the left or the right of the scale. It's partially up. On this particular meter, it's about a quarter of the way up from the zero setting, the left setting. On other meters, you may find it somewhere up quarters up the scale. Some of them were even towards the other side, three quarters of the way up the scale. But that's basically, you know what the standard is by looking on the bottom. All the marks on the bottom in red, usually, what this scale was, you know, for reference. And it just gave you, and of course, another way of going from in to out, basically. I was going to say some more words about how they, you know, worked out, you know, going down the chart from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 dBs, and some of that was, maybe I shouldn't touch so much map stick over.
HWW with another comment.
Yeah, that mic is doing it to you again, Mel. Go ahead, Howie.
Now, without math, you want to talk about filters so people know the minus 3 dB point, 0.707. And one other comment, you want to talk about, I don't know how you knew it without math, 10 log and 20 log. Talk about voltage gain and power gain.
Yeah, but we're avoiding that L name word for some time. We're going to get to that a little bit later. But Howie does bring up a very good point. Every filter, every bandpass filter we ever use, whether it's an audio bandpass filter or a radio bandpass filter, every bandpass filter you're likely to use, you're going to ask yourself about three things. What is the center frequency? What is the bandwidth? And what is the insertion loss? If it was a filter that's supposed to pass 146.85 megacycles, you probably select a filter that has that as the center frequency. If you want to make sure the filter only passes 144 to 148 megacycles, that 4 megacycles is the bandwidth of the passband. But how do you measure that bandwidth? Every filter has usually a sort of a flat top region where as you move the frequency up and down going into the filter, the response to the filter is almost constant, a little bit of ripple, but at some particular upper end of the filter or lower end of the filter, the response is going to fall off rapidly. That's exactly why you're using the filter. You want it to reject frequencies that are out of the band. And the usual point of demarcation of pass band versus reject band is the 3 dB roll-off. In other words, whatever insertion loss the filter had, in my example of 146.85, let's assume that my filter is a pretty high quality filter and it has 1 decibel of insertion loss. That means for every 1 volt I put in, I get a power output that's 79 and a fraction percent of that power. Every filter has an insertion loss. A super good filter may have a tenth of a dB insertion loss, and a yucky filter might have 4 dB insertion loss. But in my example, my filter has 1 dB of insertion loss across its passband. But where is the upper and lower roll-off frequency? I tune my signal generator. I look at the output on my instrumentation. It could be a voltohm milliammeter in some cases. It could be an oscilloscope. It could be a power meter. But I look for the point where the response is 3 decibels less, half power. Well, if I had 1 dB of loss in the center, and if I keep going up in frequency until I got a total of 4 dB of insertion loss, 3 dB greater, I would call that the upper roll-off frequency. And if that fell at 148 megacycles, and if that's the way I bought the filter, I might be quite happy. In some cases, you look for the 6 decibel roll-off frequency. And when it comes to measuring skirt selectivity of a filter, quite often they compare the 6 dB and 60 dB numbers. The 6 dB roll-off might be 149 megs, and the 60 dB roll-off might be 151 megs. And so I've got 2 megacycles of roll-off between the 6 dB and the 60 dB point. That's describing a certain slope of the skirt of the filter. To do that in decibels, with good instrumentation in a laboratory, fairly easy to do. If you had to calculate the voltages and powers for each of those roll-off points, life would be a lot more complicated. You can do it, but you'd be using a lot more pencil and paper, or modern days you'd be using a lot more of your handheld calculator. So measuring filter response and using decibels, very handy way of finding out, did that manufacturer give you what he claimed he was going to when you gave him your hard-earned money? K2KEY, K2RIW.
Now, Roger, this is K2KEY. All right. One of the questions is here, how do they, come up with these multiplication factor? All right, let's go back one time here where we had come up with this 126%, and we said that represents a 1 dB gain plus 1 dB. We found that this 126, as we said, and multiplied it by itself, cubed it, and we came up with 2. So the multiplication factor, we said, oh boy, okay, if we have a multiplication factor of 2, well, let's start back a little bit. When we came up with the originally, the 126% representing, I better back it up a little bit because I think I'm going to confuse people. If I said that 126% or that 1.26 represented a 1 dB gain, well, if we said we'll call that 1.25 or 1.26 will equal 1 dB. If we take that 1.25, now you can follow along, take the 1.26 if you have your calculator, multiply that by itself, or it's 1.26, and see what it equals. You'll see 1.58. You could say now 1.58 will give you now 2 dB. And if we multiply 1.58 again by that 1.26, it will equal to the next step, the 3 dB. So there you are. If you go along that way, we can go on and on and on and on. You can see how the multiplication factor figures into this whole system. It just keeps, in other words, moving the chart. You understand now the multiplication factor of how they came up with, like, 1.25 is 1 dB, and 1.58 times the multiplication factor is 2 dB. 2 multiplied, in other words, 1.26 by itself 3 times came up to 2, and we call that 3 dB. So it really goes up in a very nice, without using an L word, a very nice simple system that gives us a very easy way to know whether we're going from our source, our input source, whether we're going up or down, and how much, so that, you know, anybody that's looking at the piece of equipment can understand, you know, what it's doing if you were writing up a prospectus on a piece of equipment. I hope I didn't confuse anybody. I know I'll get emails on this, Dick, over.
No, I think that's quite clear. And when you're going back down, 0.79 times 1, and do it 3 times in a row, you end up with a 0.5. That's a total of half power. 3 dB of decrease is half power. So where I was talking about measuring a filter and finding the spot in frequency where the filter's response is 3 decibels less, that's also called the half power beam width. I find the upper frequency, which maybe is 148, and the lower frequency, maybe it's 144, where the filter has 3 decibels of extra loss. Those are 4 megacycles apart. I could say my filter has a half power bandwidth of 4 megacycles by measuring the two places where it's 3 decibels down, 0.5 of the power of that roll-off frequency compared to the power of the center frequency. And so decibels are very handy when it comes to measuring bandwidth of filters, ripple of filters, insertion loss of filters, gain of an amplifier, loss of a coax cable, loss of attenuator, gain of an antenna. All of these things are usually expressed in decibels, and so to be confused, to become comfortable with decibels and how they multiply and what they mean, very handy thing to know, because in the wireless world, you're going to be using those words a lot. Very rarely does a technologist in the wireless world talk about voltage ratios directly. That this amplifier gives me 1.679 times the voltage output that I put in. That's kind of inconvenient to talk about the decibels of output versus input. The gain of the amplifier is a lot handier. And the nice thing about that is because those decibels of gain of an amplifier, if you're using it in the linear region, whether you put in a small signal and you get 3 dB of gain, or a large signal, you get 3 dB of gain. In all cases, whatever power you put in, the power output would be twice as big as long as you're using the amplifier in the linear region. Every amplifier has got a nonlinear region. If you keep increasing the signal without stopping, you eventually get to the point where the amplifier starts compressing. And so if your amplifier had 3 dB of gain, when you put in 1 milliwatt, you put in 2 milliwatts, you put in 10 milliwatts, you put in 100 milliwatts, it's always got 3 dB of gain. Everything comes out twice as big. Well, if your amplifier is only good for 1 watt of output, and if you put 1 watt of input, and it can't possibly do that, it's going to saturate. And the usual definition of saturation is where the gain has decreased by 1 dB. They call it the 1 dB compression point. So you can talk about the power input or the power output, whichever rating you want, where the amplifier is 1 dB lower in gain because the signal you put in is too big. You call that the 1 dB compression point. You're measuring the dynamic range of the amplifier. Again, decibels are used. Very handy. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, very good. This is K2KEY, yep. Dick, I'll put it another way, maybe reiterate it a little bit. It's easier to work with dBs, and I'm going to give you a good idea. We talked about percentages, you know, that the 80% of the signal got through the telephone line. They said, oh boy, that's pretty good. They figured it was only a 20% loss and all. If they went ahead and they went as they were adding different things to the system, transformers, sensors, and everything, trying to improve the, you know, make up for the losses in their lines, and they were stuck only to using again percentages. You got to remember that with percentages, if we were measuring with percentages, we have to multiply. We have to use multiplication. Whereas if we use dB, we can just use simple addition and subtraction. Plus 1 dB minus 2 dB. In other words, summation like that. The plus 1 plus 2 minus 1. We wind up with plus 1, and so on and so forth. So by measuring, if we were having a number of stages, and we just went down the line, and we're just measuring it, reading it, once we've got the input, we know what our input is, and we're just going down the line, and we're measuring now, are we gaining or are we losing? Gaining or losing? Well, at the end of there, usually by mentally, we can simply, most likely, keep track. Whereas, can you imagine we're doing it percentage-wise, how to keep multiplying, you know, all kinds of percentages, and at the end, you know, would come out to maybe 10 numbers, points, you know, something with 10 numbers after it, you'd go crazy. So this way, simply, instead of working with percentages, we can work simply with simple numbers of adding and subtracting, and at the end result, no matter how many stages we were evaluating, at the end result, if no matter how many people did it, they're all going to come up with the same answer because they're reading simple numbers, Dick, over.
Another good example. Decibels are a little bit scary. Adding decibels, you're really multiplying numbers. And so you're multiplying power input versus power output. And if you use a slightly different kind of decibels, You'd be multiplying voltage to 20 type decibels instead of the 10 type decibels. We're not going to go there tonight. But the first time you hear it, it sounds a little bit crazy. Don't let it scare you. Just keep hacking away at it. I guarantee if you Google the word decibel or bell and started reading what Wikipedia's got to say, guarantee it'll make it a lot clearer. There's probably 10 good articles that you'll find by Googling the word decibel, decibel power ratios, decibel voltage ratios. And the combination of reading that, reading the appropriate section of the Radio Amateur's Handbook. I believe the Radio Amateur's Handbook has a section on decibels. There might even be a section on it with reference to the antenna handbook. So it's a good thing to become familiar with. If you stay with technology, you'll be using it for the rest of your life. It's a good investment, in my opinion. Back to you, Mel, K2LIW.
Dick, subtraction is division.
Agreed. I should have said that. So with decibels, when you add decibels, you're multiplying. When you subtract decibels, you're dividing. And sometimes long division of great big numbers, when you're talking about amplifiers with a whole lot of gain, the mathematics is hairy, but adding and subtracting decibels is a hell of a lot easier. Over to you, Mel.
Exactly. Okay, this is K2KEY. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Very easy to add and subtract them, no matter how many stages you're going through, because the numbers are much simpler to handle than working in anything else, and that's basically where this came from. They wanted a simple way of, you know, evaluating without depending on human hearing, because if you listen, you know, one example I'll give you. Say we're sitting outside, Dick and I were sitting outside one summer night, and we're just talking, and there's a cricket that is in the bush next to us, and we say, gee, that's an awful loud cricket, and we both agree that's a pretty loud cricket. All of a sudden, the alarm system goes off in the driveway of my car that's on the other side of where we're sitting, and we say, gee, that alarm is very loud. Now, as compared the alarm to the cricket, would you say that the alarm is twice as loud, three times as loud, or whatever? The human ear, and here's where the word I'm going to slip it in, is not linear. And there's where the problem lies. What is the true difference? So we said, well, if we measured what the cricket, the sound the cricket is making, as compared to the alarm, then we could, as a standard, again, see, we've got two things we can compare. We could tell you how much louder the alarm on the car is than what the cricket noise that they're making. And as I said, I could be sitting there and I say, I think this alarm is twice as loud as the cricket. They could say it was three times as loud. Another person, neighbor, comes by and says, about four times as loud the alarm than that cricket. There's no way you're going to know unless you can make a measurement, because the human ear can't discern exactly. There's no way that you can depend on the human ear. Go ahead, then.
Absolutely. In that case, you'd be using a sound level meter, measuring the cricket and measuring the alarm. That would give you a reading that, if it's well calibrated, it's traceable to the Bureau of Standards, and it takes away most of the human subjectivity. Sound levels to two different people is somewhat subjective. Yeah, one guy will, everybody will agree that the alarm is louder. But there's another factor to be worried about here, and that's distance. If I was 1 foot away from that cricket versus 100 feet away from the cricket, my sound level meter is going to measure very large differences. Same thing with the alarm from the car. If I'm standing right at the bumper of the car, or if I'm 100 feet away from the car, sound level, just like radio level, follow the inverse square law. Every time you double the distance, you get one quarter of the power. So it's a 6 decibel change, whether it be the cricket sound or the alarm sound, every time I change the distance between me and that source of sound, there's going to be a 6 decibel change, a 4 to 1 difference in power every time I double or half the distance to that source of sound. So just measuring the sound with a sound level meter is a good beginning, but if you're really a scientist, you'll also get out your yardstick and find out how many feet you were away from that source when you made the sound measurement. And if you want to go one step further, you find out how reflective was the environment. If the cricket in the bush was up against the side of the garage, and the garage wall is reflecting some of that signal, that's going to make a difference. So it's amazing how many variables there are in a simple measurement, even when you go from the subjective human hearing ear to a well-calibrated sound meter. But still, each one of these steps get you closer to the truth. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Roger, this is K2KEY. Well, I just want to emphasize that you can't depend on the human ear. We're sitting next to each other on a bench right there, whether the cricket is nearby and the car is further up the driveway. It's what we are, as an individual, is feeling the sound. In other words, what are we actually thinking to ourselves? How loud or how low, difference in the sound level. In other words, we just want to know how much louder it is. And if we sat the meter right there with us and all, and it would tell us right away is what we're hearing. In other words, okay, that's the best way to put it, those words. What we're hearing, the two of us on the bench next to each other and trying to determine between the two of us how much louder the siren is than the cricket. The meter will now tell us by listening first to picking up the cricket sound, and then the alarm goes off again, how much difference. Again, see, this is what I'm trying to emphasize. We'll use the cricket as our standard and see what the gain is toward the alarm on the car. Again, louder, that's gain. The car has got the gain. Over the cricket sound. That's what I'm trying to bring out, Dick. Over.
And part of the reason why you have to use a sound level meter is because even if you don't change human beings, even if you continuously use Mel as a sound reference, and he tells you, I hear a certain amount of sound out of that cricket, and he tells you, I hear a certain amount of sound decibels louder from that alarm from his car down the driveway. When you make that measurement will make the difference. If Mel wakes up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and if his kitty cat is tiptoeing across the living room rug and touches a marble on the floor and starts scooting the marble around, that sound can be very loud to Mel, because when the environment is quiet, the sensitivity of your hearing increases. And so a rather weak sound can be quite loud to your perception at 3 o'clock in the morning. You've just woken up in a quiet house. You take a subway ride where there's screeching of the brakes of the subway and people talking to each other and whatever, and you walk out of the subway, walk directly into a sound booth, and they make a quick measurement of your sound hearing sensitivity. You'll get a very different number when you just walk off that subway platform and if they did the measurement at 3 o'clock in the morning when you just woke up. Your vision changes by tremendous amounts when your eyes are dark adapted versus at high noon. Your hearing changes its sensitivity by a huge amount depending on what you were doing for the last half hour. The good news is the human biological system is very adaptable to that daytime environment or that nighttime environment. It's a survival mechanism. Your early ancestors at 3 o'clock in the morning wanted to hear a very small sound because it might represent a predator. And to that predator, you're a piece of food, and you'd like to know about that pretty soon. So you can see part of the reason why exact sound levels are some of the crazy numbers you hear the weakest sound level that a human hearing system, when it's dark adapted, so to speak, can hear, is a certain sound level. And ordinary human speech, when two people talk to each other, is something like 65 decibels louder than that. That screeching sound you hear in the subway, or if you're standing on the flight line of a jet airplane, fighter jet alongside of it, that sound in either case can be 122 decibels louder. That's approximately the threshold of pain, a sound level they call 122 dB. What they really mean is it's 122 decibels louder than the weakest sound your hearing and a good hearing system will listen to and be able to sense. So there are soft sounds, loud sounds, threshold of pain sounds, and there are sounds that are above the level where hearing damage will take place. If you're less than a quarter of a mile behind the jet engines of a B-1 bomber, and if they are taking off and using afterburner, and if you're not wearing ear protection, a quarter of a mile away, your hearing will be permanently damaged. And a person doing a hearing test on you will find out you've got certain suck out of certain frequencies, and the guy running the test will say, I know where you work, and I know where you've been, and I know what you've been exposed to. They'll recognize those characteristic sounds of a jet engine as being the suck outs in your hearing. So when your daughter or your son is turning up the audio real loud in his automobile because he likes loud music and he wants to feel it, or you're at a wedding reception and the DJ loves to shake the floor because people who are dancing just love to have the sound that loud, and if your table happens to be very close to that DJ's loudspeaker, and if you're not wearing ear protection of some kind, and you walk out of that hall and you hear ringing sounds in your ears, Mother Nature is telling you something. You've gone beyond the threshold where hearing damage could take place. Hearing is an extremely valuable organ. Try not to damage it. Try to talk your children into not turning the sound so loud in that automobile. They paid big money. They bought a 100-watt amplifier, stereo, for their automobile, and they think they've got something good. But they may not hear a honking horn, they may not hear the siren of a police car, and they may be damaging their hearing. And it's something to be concerned about. And they're at an exact sound level at which is the threshold of damage. You should try to stay very far away from it. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Roger, you're 100% right, Dick. This is K2KEY. I tell my daughters all the time, don't do it. You're going to ruin your hearing because you're getting used to, this is a funny part, I should say, we get used to louder and louder sounds. In fact, like you said before, that marble rolling across the floor, the pussycat pushing it around, maybe a little night would upset you. But there are people that wouldn't even hear it. There are people that get so used to, they work in a boiler factory or something, and they get so used to that loud sound that for you or I may walk in there and it would be painful. You'd actually feel pain. And yet their ear has adjusted to it. So that's the human ear, but it doesn't do the human ear any good because eventually they do need, I guess, they're going to need hearing aids. In fact, I think we're going to bring up a whole generation now that eventually when they become I'm not going to say senior citizens, Dick, but let's say years young, that they'll be wearing hearing aids, unfortunately. All right, that seems to be, I think, hope we covered DP pretty much by the simplest way of really referencing it. We didn't get into, I didn't want to stay away from the L word, we stayed away from things like DBM and all that, and things of that sort and all. So I think we'll leave it at this. We'll see what the feedback email-wise. I'm sure this has given them at least a lot of insight not to be afraid of DB. It seems to be one of the most fearful parts of amateur radio is understanding this business. And again, I'll emphasize, don't worry about the meter so much, that F meter. Forget it. Just enjoy ham radio. Make the contacts and I'll only use it as a reference. Somebody wants to check antenna AB. Somebody wants to check their amplifier. Any of those things. Good. Great. That's what that meter is does. But the rest of it, believe me, you're not going to, you're working at PX stations like last night. Listening hundreds and hundreds of stations calling. From his frequency, the PX station is FJ, Fox Juliet. From 2 kilohertz up from where he was, he said up 2 plus. There was spread out 10 kilohertz up. There were stations spread out. And he, whatever warning worked, it all he did is hit, gave you a call, and then he hit that, that's it. You could hear me hit that button. Everybody was 599. Out of hundreds of contacts, everybody was 599. So, you know, this is, it's not the important thing. The important thing is that you work the best. This is what I say is the bottom line. And with that, I think we can let the DBs go for tonight. I can say, well, get the feedback on this. K2RIW and the TechNet, K2KTY.
Yeah, there's one other safety warning I'd like to give now, and that is very loud music at a wedding reception, very loud music in your automobile, very loud music in your home. You got to be careful with those. You can damage your hearing. Another place where people damage their hearing is at a shooting range. If you think you are a macho guy and you go to a shooting range and you're not wearing ear protection, there's a high probability you're going to create permanent damage to your hearing. You won't know it while you're doing it. In other words, you could be going to that shooting range for 2 years steady, and you're one of these macho guys, and you don't wear earplugs or these ear protection, earphone type things, because you think you're a brave guy. 10 years later, when you're wearing a hearing aid for the rest of your life, you'll say, gee, I wish I hadn't done that. But the sad state of affairs of doing damage to your eyes or ears, that the damage sets in at a later time. You don't get an immediate feedback. You don't get a clear warning. You get a little bit of a warning if you recognize the signs. The ringing in the ears is telling you something. There's very delicate hairs inside of the cochlea of your hearing system, and they've got very sensitive little detectors connected to each one of those hairs. And so when the when your eardrum presses against the tympanic membrane with the anvil and stirrup and whatever, and it sets up a sound wave in that cochlea, and that sound pressure wave is moving those little hairs, that's how your hearing system really works. You put in a loud enough sound, you damage those individual hairs. You either blast them away entirely, or you desensitize the detector that's at the base of each one of those little hairs. And pretty soon, there are certain notes that you don't hear anymore, because a standing wave is set up in that cochlea, which emphasizes certain sounds, certain frequencies. It's kind of amazing that the hearing system, when you see it as a schematic, it looks simple. There's a lot more going on there. A good hearing system can measure the difference of 1 hertz. In other words, somebody can play you a 999 hertz note or a 1kc note, and you might be able to tell the difference between the two. Percentage-wise, that's an extremely small change in frequency, and a well-tuned hearing system can do that. A well-tuned hearing system can listen to multiple tones simultaneously and literally measure the amplitude and frequency of each one of those tones, even though they're occurring on top of each other. It's a so-called ubiquitous spectrum analyzer. The spectrum analyzer that you buy, that you pay $60,000 for, cannot do that. It takes a very special kind of spectrum analyzer to be able to measure simultaneous signals coincident in time, as your hearing system can do. Okay, so treat it with respect, both your eyes and your ears. Treat them with an awful lot of respect. They'll give you an awful lot of service for a lot of years if you don't do foolish things in your youth. To try to convince your offspring, your children, not to do these foolish things is not easy. It's an uphill battle. I recommend you fight that battle so that those sensors give them good service in later life. Maybe we should go to the mail bell at Bagnell. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Roger, this is K2KEY. That's why I carry these little red earplugs that's always in my pocket whenever we go out to the city or places, because a lot of places you walk in, the noise is literally deafening and everything. And even when I, a lot of times I sit in the train, I want to read many times. I just have these, I just push these things in my ear, and it does a lot to cut down the level of noise. I'm not used to, you know, I get on the train and not too often, really. And sometimes it's a little too much. So a word to the wise would be, Dick says, carry, get these little red things, or I guess they come different colors. They plug in your ears, like these little earphones that they sell also, these buds, or whatever it is. But in this case, they kill that noise level quite a bit. And Dick says, take care of your ears. They'll last you a lifetime if you take care of them. All right, shall we go on and try another one?
I think we should.
Yep, for the comment.
Okay, who comment? Go ahead, please.
At KC2RGW, Chris, just a quick nickel here on hearing protection. I worked as a sound engineer, did live sound production for about 5 years. So I'm very familiar with high noise environments, and something I picked up in those environments were in-ear monitors, those noise-isolating earphones. And the other day, I happened to remember I had them kicking around here, and pulled them out, and plugged them into my HF rig, and they're fantastic, because they keep you from turning up the radio to insane volume levels, trying to dig signals out of the noise, because they seal off in your ear now when you plug them in, so you can have immense concentration at much, much lower volume levels. And I found them to be extremely useful. And the FT-1000 that I use actually separates the two VFOs in about an 80-20 split. Left to right, as you look at the rig, is one of the options, and it's very, very useful.
Roger. Yeah, Chris, I have the same thing. I have a pair of Heil sound editing phones, and I also have the FT-1000 Mark V, and yes, I agree 100%. Oh, boy, what a difference that makes when you flip on that switch on the sound editing, and really... really appreciate the difference. Okay, let's see now. Let's see. I'm looking through. Okay, apropos what we were talking about, you talked about your loop antenna many times, your full-wave loop. What is the difference between a full-wave loop and a rhombic antenna? All right, you want to take that, Dick, first?
Yes, I do. If you start off with a half-wave dipole and you properly feed it and you measure its antenna pattern, in three-dimensional space it looks like a donut. But the main thing you care about is that the strongest signal comes out at right angles to the wire, broadside as they say. That's the strongest signal. You go to the appropriate chapter of the antenna book, the ARO antenna book, and you will see that as you go through three-quarter wave, one and a quarter, one and a half, one and three-quarter, as you make the dipole longer and longer, and as you properly impedance match it so it still accepts the power and radiates all of that power, yes, it develops multiple lobes. But in general, the strongest lobe is the one that becomes closest to the wire. As the wire gets longer and longer, the strongest lobe is the one that almost hugs the wire. And that's when you see it as a two-dimensional diagram, it looks like a lobe to the right of the wire and to the left of the wire. In reality, in three-dimensional space, it's a cone of energy around the wire. You just take that diagram that you see and rotate it about the wire, and you get the whole three-dimensional pattern. So as the wire becomes longer and longer, the signal starts, the strongest lobe, you get multiple lobes, but the strongest lobe almost starts following the wire. Okay, for a certain length of wire, the strongest lobe coming off of the antenna might be, let's say, 20 degrees away from the wire. If you now set up a rhombic antenna, where each one of the four legs of the rhombic are exactly that number of wavelengths long, And if each one of the legs are tilted at a 20-degree angle from bore site, you can then have the left-hand wire and the right-hand wire both make a lobe that goes right down the bore site.